Recording. All right, so good morning, everyone, and welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And I have Bruce here on the phone with Skype, and we're here going to look at a topic from the foundation. Let me get a link for you all if you want to go and look. And good morning, Bruce. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Lynn. Well, and yourself?
I'm pretty well. Every morning I wake up and I kind of go, is it now? Do I have to, is it now again? Here I'm up again. But, you know, not sleeping a lot because my daughter is still very, very sick.
Oh.
So, spend a lot of time with her during the night. And of course she's not sleeping either. So, you know, it's not like, you know, any big deal to me. But it's always, you know, it's an interesting situation, and I'm sure it's quite, the best thing for me all the way around, dealing with this. So.
No matter what it is, we always can see peace instead of what our ego presents to us, can't we? I mean, it's just awesome. Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's such a wonderful and lovely. I was thinking about it yesterday and how, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, if I had been in this situation, I would have been in a lot of fear and panic and, not known what to do. But, now I always know. And, you know, the main thing I just do is love her and, you know that she's in perfect hands and being taken care of perfectly, as am I. And it really is a beautiful, beautiful way to live. And I'm so very grateful for that.
And for those of you who just tuned in, Lynn was not talking about the current press secretary, right?
That, no.
Although it could apply, right?
It's interesting to me. The juxtaposition of this.
I was just thinking, what if somebody just, you know... join in a moment or two later. What is Lynn talking about?
Yes, it's someone who's ill and who we must be in the right mind to deal with.
What a great reminder that we're all insane here. If we think, you know, as I listen to, you know, fairly frequently, and last year a lot, I had one of Ken's audio commentaries on lesson 182, and it was just talking about how if we think we're here, you know, if this is not our home, but if we think we're here, that's a scary place to be, and we're all, you know, afraid, and we think we're all alone. We're just like little trembling kids that just want to go home, and I think that's something we forget about, and we lose sight of when we get immersed in our roles and identified with the special characters that seem to be the big deals that occupy our minds. So this curriculum that we've found that is a real alternative, it asks us to question, the viability of that approach, that insane curriculum, and replaces it with one where we gradually, disidentify with what isn't working, and as Ken Walking says, the maladaptive solution to the non-existent problem, and you know, patiently and compassionately release our white-knuckled grip on an identity that has never worked for us and will never work for us, and everyone's in that same boat. So we're all deserving our compassion, whether it's someone named Kellyanne or your daughter, or someone we pass on the street, or you know, someone we love to hate on TV, or someone we I hate to love somewhere else. You know, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Well, it's so beautiful because I was listening to Ken Wapnick workshop called No Man is an Island, and which is just so apropos for what's happening right now. And the second part of it, the first part is really good, but the second part of it, he goes into this discussion about, you know, what about these political figures and, you know, these figures in the dream that we assign all this guilt to, and that we you know, we look upon and we see them as being, you know, something different. And you know, he really brought some light and clarity to me from that. And in fact, I've listened to it several times because, you know, whenever I start going into this angry, fearful thing, which is what is so easy to do if you are aligned with ego and believing that the world is real, believing that it's capable, that individual characters in the dream are capable of going outside of the script to cause or make some new mischief or mayhem. And, you know, the reality of it is that can't happen. That, no matter what it is that we see, it really is an outpicturing of an inner condition. And so, you know, when I listen to that and think about that, I go into first, some serious guilt because, geez, my inner condition is pretty screwed up if, you know, what I'm seeing is all of this mayhem. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but not to feel guilty because right. In reality, this is something that was scripted long ago. It's not something that, you know, I just made it got up this morning and said, oh, I'm going to change the script and make some, you know, maniac take over. No, that is not what's happening. You know, these are all part of the progression of our dreams that, you know, if at any moment, I could see peace instead of this,
mm-hmm.
then I move out of the battleground, out of the dream, and exactly. I'm no longer feeling like I'm subject to the whims of this malicious ego and recognizing that, you know, these are all just lessons that God would have me learn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sooner I learn this lesson, the less pain I'm in, and the more I learn the lesson, the less pain I'm in. The lessons.
yeah.
Learn
exactly.
The lesson, lessen your pain. That's it.
Yeah. Every seeming other person is a projection of our divided mind that's calling for love or expressing it, depending on what appears to be the case at any given moment, and that is really just an equal, completely generalizable curriculum. If we begin to see the pattern and begin to see that everyone, without exception, is in that same situation. We're all dealing with this tripartite system of a decision-making mind, and then that little pivot point or fulcrum that is constantly choosing between expressing love or the thought system of what the Course in Miracles calls forgiveness and kindness and shared interests, the Holy Spirit way of thinking that we took with us into the dream, or it's expressing a call for love, which is can take many forms. And oftentimes, it's incredibly well disguised and propagandized as being something other than that, but that's basically underneath all the junk, that's what's all the garbage, that's what's going on in everyone's mind. And so you know, that's why today's workbook lesson ties into yesterday's beautifully. That's, you know, we're all part of the mind of God. Every single seeming other is part of God's mind, and therefore very holy, and even the word very and holy are of course dualistic words, but they're, you know, the best description that we can come up with for something that reminds us that the perfection that we really all are is beyond anything we can imagine as little separate ego selves, certainly as bodies, and you know, all the attributes that we ascribe to ourselves and to other people are just clothing on dream figures. They're just facades. They're just, you know, we're all naked emperors here, but we think we've got all these attributes and qualities and characteristics, but they're basically just opportunities, seen rightly, for looking at the special love that's usually the first thing that surfaces, and then the special hate when we, you know, suddenly realize that, gee, the things that we thought we liked in, you know, a new acquaintance, whether it's a lover, a mate, or a politician, or a, you know, person at a checkout counter, you know, it's all the same. It's basically the isolated hate and the isolated love out of context of seeing them all the same are both smoke screens for the real love that's behind. And so I think that's today's FAQ that could fit really nicely into that and kind of tie into, you know, a few days early to the whole Valentine's theme of special relationships.
Ooh, cool. Well, good. So I did post it in the room. We are on 1261. Is that the one that you've sent me?
That's one I thought might be a great one to talk about.
Okay,
today.
Very good. Yeah. Why don't you you read the question?
Sure. Again, we've been reading from, for quite some time, Lynn and I have been reading from facimoutreach.org, which you can get to, if that's harder to remember, just go to facim.org. And earlier in the conversation this morning, Lynn, you mentioned foundations. There's actually really two sister foundations for A Course in Miracles. One is, of course, acim.org is the website, which is the Foundation for Inner Peace that's in Northern California. And that's Judy Sketch and her Sketch Whitson and her organization there, and doing wonderful work. And then the other one, also doing wonderful work, is continuing on with Ken Wapnick's wonderful legacy, is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula, California, Southern California. And what we've been reading from for some time now is just one portion of their massive website, which has over 1,300 frequently asked questions. And you can get to it by going to facim.org and then clicking on the supplemental materials and then, you know, drilling down and finding this. There's over 1,300 questions, and we're kind of nearing the end of those, but we could go back and start again when we, you know, exhaust these, which it will actually take a while, even if we just read one a week. But so this one is number 1261. If you're reading in the chronological order, you can find it that way quickly. And like you said, Lynn, you posted it in the room. But anyway, this one starts out, if someone loves you, desires a special relationship with you, pledges their devotion and undying love, but you are still not attracted to that person in that way and prefer to live alone, does that mean you're afraid of love? Should you consider a special relationship with that person? Ken says in, quote, Living the Course, unquote, which is an audio album, that we should not abandon our special relationships, I can say that, for they are opportunities for learning. Is it wrong to turn away love on the level of form? Are we not told to, quote, give them what they want, unquote, when they seek love? So there's a loaded question right off the bat. A lot of different topics there, and of course this applies to every kind of relationship, not just the so-called romantic ones, but really the relationship that we have with everyone and everything. So it's an all-encompassing curriculum. Since it's a non-dual course, it basically reminds us to extend and generalize this thinking to include every situation until the belief in separation has been healed in our minds. And that's what we're doing. So do you want to read the first paragraph answer or comment on the question?
Sure. Absolutely. And you know, this question is so beautiful, because, you know, it's a question about love and, you know, devotion, undying love, attraction, all about special relationship. But who among us really do know what love is? And, you know, we have this idea that, you know, we know what it is because of our experience in the world. And in reality, there's no experience in the world of love that is actually what love really is. The experiences that we have in the world of love really are all contingent on one thing or another. So, you know, I love you, you're my child, and I love you. You're my husband, and I love you. You're you're my neighbor and I don't love you. So there's always some reason for special love. And for real love, there is no reason. There's no need for a reason because it just is what is. So, I think a lot of people, come into this and they're like, well, it's love and I love you and you don't love me. And, you know, how can you talk to a son of God this way? Because you're talking to me lovelessly when really they don't even know what love is. Mm-hmm. And, so Jesus talks to us very lovingly in A Course in Miracles, and he is very, blunt about things. He's very, he doesn't try to soothe our egos with any kind of, fluffing up. He's really just telling us as it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is why a lot of people run away from the Course, because they don't see it as loving.
Right.
They don't see, Course students as loving. If a Course student rejects them for any reason and they blame it on their, inability to know the Course, or that they're rejecting Jesus, or all these conditions. See, it's all conditional. So, it's real easy to see if it's love or not. Because if it turns into something else because the condition changes, then it is not love and never has been. And
take on that. Yeah, thank you. What you just said, pardon for the interruption, it just reminded me of the way you phrased the scenario kind of reminded me, well, what if someone were to take away someone's drug or addiction or do something that calls that, you know, brings that to light or calls it into question, you know, that's, I think, oftentimes where our egos say, what? How dare you, you know, look at what isn't working for me and then ask me if that's working, you know. But that's exactly what Jesus does in his Course here. He's basically saying, you know, if you're willing to look at what isn't working, it's just kind of like, you know, set the drug down and just see what you're, see what your addiction level is. And we're all so hooked on ego's propaganda, which is, you know, our addiction, to this outer shield of oblivion, which is the world, and thinking that there's so much stuff in the world that we have to deal with, which on the level of form is true, but on the level of mind, there's a quality of peace that the Course leads us back to that, really is able to look at the special relationships that we have with things, which it could be, you know, with a substance, it could be with food, it could be with sex, it could be with, you know, rock and roll, sex, drugs, rock and roll, religion and politics, wanting to shout back at the TV. It could be anything in the world that makes us, anything less, you know, that seems to make us less than peaceful is, fair game for, that curriculum, and really is welcomed by the true self, the capital S self that we are, but you know, repulsed by the little s ego self that we've become so identified with, and so exactly. if we're not consciously aware of that, you know, we will get blindsided by ego's, you know, retaliative reaction to this curriculum, and we'll say, well, what? How come I suddenly am seeing things as, you know, getting so horrible? Well, no, they've been horrible all along. We just didn't want to look at it, and now that it's presented to us on a silver platter, it should come as no surprise that this is ego's response is upping the ante, typing in the nuclear launch codes when his thought system is called into question. And that's basically what happens whenever we start looking at our special relationships with anyone or anything and honestly appraising them. The ego's not going to sit still for that. It basically says, well, what? You're calling this whole miserable, you know, victimhood, martyrdom, identity into question. I'm not going to sit still for that.
Exactly. Yeah, well, so it's interesting, Bruce. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I finished the thought. Yeah.
Okay. What's interesting is that I've been watching a lot of videos and I've been really, really upset about this whole business with the election and who's in charge now and all the crazy things they seem to be doing. But I've been watching videos of when Obama came in. And how irate people were because he was doing all these executive orders, and how irate people were that he was, you know, moving forward with his programs, and how terrified, I mean, seriously terrified people were of Barack Obama and his agenda. And then, you know, juxtaposing that to what's happening now, and it's like the same thing.
Right.
Only this time, it's me that's upset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time, it's me that objects. This time, it's me that's not happy about it. And this time, the folks that I think are just so insane.
Well,
I
think that's a perfect example of how we can learn from our friend George Orwell, who in Animal Farm penned the phrase I think is brilliant to this day and applies in so many situations. That, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, you know. and I think that's why this course is such a challenging one, because it's a truly egalitarian, completely inclusive curriculum that says everyone here is in the same boat. We're all struggling against this tyrannical thought system whose propaganda, highly effective propaganda, is to get us to side with one or the other. And as long as it's an either or, you know, we, they, paradigm, then we're going to be miserable, because we know that if we leave any part of the universe out of the perfect oneness, the perfect innocence, the holy mind that today's workbook lesson suggests that we are part of, then we basically shatter that oneness, and that's the throwing God under the bus that we think we pulled off. And it's just brought up in front of our face again and again and again until we recognize that isn't working. That just has never worked. That adversarial, condemnatory approach to looking at the world, no matter how subtle or how blatant, never has worked, and the form may change. And sometimes it seems to change every 4 years or every however, you know, a few seconds or whatever. But it's the same curriculum every moment. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It is
amazing to see the workings of the mind and the workings of the ego, and how I felt so self-righteous and justified, and, you know, I thought I was just so up there in my thinking, and now I just see, oh no, you know, no different. I'm no different than the looniest person in the planet. I mean, really, because I am the looniest person on the, I mean, really, it is all a reflection of my own thinking.
Yeah, and so I think
clear.
It is clear, and I think we're kind of all, if we're honest with ourselves, when we get involved in reacting to our own projections and forgetting that they're projections, we're kind of like the proverbial guy at the bar who asks, is this the private fight or can anyone join in? You know, cause, you know, really, I mean, cause if, yeah. if you think about how easy it is to get sucked into, wanting to make a big deal out of things of a moment's duration, as the Course puts it, you know, how important is it to really invest our identity in something that's so fleeting and so ephemeral and so, you know, subject to the whim of time, which is a part of ego's creation. And yet we know that's not going to make us happy.
Yeah.
And that's where peace is, you know, the door is barred to that peace in that thought system and can never get in. Only there's, you know, the moments of brief euphoria, but that it's never satisfying. It's never real enough to, other than just to, you know, the fake peace that the ego has is really more of a temporary battle victory, you know, that, you know, oh, wow, okay, I managed to escape that, or now I'm, you know, ego's form of gratitude. And I'm glad that I'm not as miserable as those poor bastards over there, you know, kind of thing, you know, for any given moment, right? But that's kind of the, if you're honest with yourself, that's ego's, you know, scraps of bread, you know, little crumbs
one
of bread.
One or the other. Yeah.
Yeah, the one or the other, you know, alleged payoff that really never makes us happy.
Yeah,
and
that's
why I think looking at the special relationships is so rich with you know material for looking at our minds and how we all have a completely abundant classroom moment to moment for looking at the contents of our unconscious mind handed to us on a silver platter, whether it's watching the TV, noticing your response to your daughter's state of health, whatever it is, and you know, my looking at the stacks of paper around the room and thinking, I really need to get my taxes done so that I can qualify for the refi. And you know, all the stuff that goes through the one's mind. You know, just there's just tons of things that we've piled up around of us, sometimes literally and figuratively, that are, you know, ego's propaganda if we don't question them. But they can be just as easily become a classroom in mindfulness, and that's why special relationships are the bread and butter of the course. So do you want to read the first
Sure.
Okay.
And I'm going to read the first paragraph. I'm just going to add one little note here.
Sure.
As difficult as it is to say, I really am grateful that Trump did win, because I would not have seen this depth of angst in my own mind if things would have been going on as usual, and I would have been saying, no, I approve. This is all right. This is cool. This is good. And, you know, to see how easily upset I am by things in the world, when I thought I had it all together is really, well, it's like, you know, slap me hard. Because, you know, it's time to really wake up to the mechanism of my own, how I've been fooling myself. So, so let us go on. The question to remind everyone, in fact, I'll just read the question because it's been like 20 minutes since we
did
it.
Sure.
And then I'll go on to the first paragraph of the answer. Yeah. If someone loves you, desires a special relationship with you, pledges their devotion and undying love, but you are still not attracted to that person in that way and prefer to live alone, does that mean you are afraid of love? Should you consider a special relationship with that person? Ken says in Living the Course, an audio album, that we should not abandon our special relationships, for they are opportunities for learning. Is it wrong to turn away love on the level of form? Are we not told to give them what they want when they seek love? So this is a perfect setup. I mean, really, this is a perfect setup question. Because it's all about, what am I supposed to do? What is Jesus telling me to do? You know, there's so much it's rich. So the answer starts. Frequently, students avoid their feelings of attraction to someone because they think that special relationships are bad and should never be entered into. And just as frequently, students will leave special relationships for the same reason. Both attitudes are seriously misconstrue what A Course in Miracles teaches. The point is that our relationships are the curriculum Jesus uses to help us get in touch with the choices we are making in our minds, so that we can then shift the purpose for which we are using them from an unholy one, separation, to a holy one, the Holy Spirit's forgiveness process. So, right there, it's you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And there's another way.
if you identify with the ego, which is our default mode as you know, citizens of this dream world, you know, that's what we came here to do. But we can choose a different purpose, and that's the curriculum of forgiveness that the Holy Spirit, a.k.a. our inner kindness teacher, a.k.a. Jesus of the Course of Miracles, suggests to us. That's the awareness we took with us into the dream that leads us out of the craziness and the insanity of the adversarial, confrontational, you know, polarizing, divisive thought system that the ego only knows, and it doesn't know how to how it doesn't know holiness because it doesn't know wholeness. It doesn't know inclusion because its whole premise for its alleged existence is based on the idea of exclusion, and that there's a we and a they, there's a self and a not self, there's a subject and an object. I mean, that's why, the course, says that consciousness was it's the realm of the ego, because there's a subject and object going on. There's someone that I'm attracted to or repulsed by, and then there's the self that's doing the attracting or the repulsing, it's all the nature of the projection of the ego mind, the bullseye arena for our course curriculum. So just look at that stuff as it comes up moment to moment, and it will, and it does. And I think anyone who's honest with themselves will realize it's 24/7, 365, because the ego never shuts up. It never takes it. Siestas or goes to sleep, just as our real self never, is asleep. It's they're always there. They're present 24/7, 365 for us to choose between. But the Holy Spirit's curriculum is the real alternative, the real choice. That's above the battleground that looks at all of the ego's special love, special hate, battleground, choices that seem to be different. I want to be with this person and not be with this person. I like this person. I don't like this person, this other person. All that stuff is just exactly what the ego wants us to identify with. But it is also just exactly what our Holy Spirit curriculum has in mind for us to look at the ego and say, I can forgive myself for this. I can look at how I've identified with that dysfunctional idea and just say gently and firmly that, I can practice the three R's in this, of forgiveness. I can reveal to myself that choice in attitude and belief hasn't worked for me. I can release my identity investment in that choice, using that specific as a way to get back to my unconscious mind. And then when I reveal and release, the replacement, which is the Holy Spirit's job, and we just get the heck out of the way, is automatic. It just, because when we basically have, looked down at our ankle, seen that we've shackled ourselves, and that's the reveal. It's like, oh, no wonder I haven't got very far. I've got manacled here. the release is, oh, hey, I have the key in my hand. It's this thought system of forgiveness. And we put the key in the lock, and sure enough, that ankle, iron, it falls off, and we're free to go. Well, then the freedom is the release. That's the result that comes from revealing and releasing. The replacement. The replacement is the third R. That's the revelation that hey, what's always been there, the freedom, is now our choice, and because we've chosen against the false alternative. And that's why I think Ken Wapnick brilliantly says it's not a course in the yes, it's a course in not no. It's just saying no to the ego, which is the ego's negative curriculum. Shall I read the next paragraph?
Go ahead, please. Thank you.
Okay. This does not mean that you should start up a relationship with someone to whom you're not attracted for the sole purpose of learning lessons. You already have many special relationship classrooms by virtue of your being the child of parents, alive or deceased. There's plenty right there on that. That's, volumes and lifetimes worth of curriculum for most people there. A relative of other family members, more of the same, a friend, a member of certain groups, which we could certainly say gender, ethnic, political, there's just so many right there, an employee or employer, a neighbor, a pet owner possibly. Well, in that case, it's definitely good. Two kitties, and one of whom is stalking the other right now as we speak. a consumer, that brings in the whole realm of everything from product safety to the abolishing the EPA, which appears maybe underway, to a citizen, you know, certainly the whole political spectrum of, you know, things to get invested in or to not be invested in, but be appropriate in our response based on, you know, going beyond level confusion. And then it says, et cetera. So right there, there's just, you know, huge, rich, volumes and universes of classrooms to work with. But fortunately, we don't have to resolve everything in the universe at once. We just get, you know, at least in any given moment, you know, one amalgamated classroom of situations to look at and deal with. And it's all perfect mathematically, because the script was made by the ego and, but the Holy Spirit script was fabricated as an undo script. It's the exact, you know, it's really beyond time, but because of the grace and the, you know, the saving grace, if you will, of the Holy Spirit's curriculum, it took every single thing in ego script and made a corollary. It made a forgiveness corollary to it. So that when we went into the dream, kind of like following a dark thread into a cave or a labyrinth, the ego's curriculum becomes the Holy Spirit's curriculum, just turned around and hand over hand the other direction, and becomes this golden thread that glows brighter and brighter as we lead ourselves with Holy Spirit's help out of, you know, ego's nightmare cavern of darkness. And so anyway, and then it goes on. In other words, you are not deprived of classrooms because you prefer to live alone. You know, dealing with this specifically in terms of typically romantic relationships are, you know, sort of in the middle of the bullseye typically. Special relationships are in the mind, meaning the way we relate to others reflects the choice we have made in our mind to live out the ego's thought system or the Holy Spirit's thought system. The form or expression of this varies greatly, and there's our seemingly individual curriculum with all the subtleties and nuances that appear to be different. But it's really the content is the same. It just, you know, our mind has fabricated this elaborate, you know, set design and costumes, and everyone in our lives and everything in our lives fulfills that script in all of its elaborate detail for the sole purpose, seen rightly, of our forgiveness. Yeah. Anyway, I'll start that sentence over again. The form or expression of this varies greatly and is not limited to sexual or romantic partners, of course. Yeah, it's everyone we come across. The holy relationship is simply the correction of our choice to identify with the ego. That's it. And the expression of that choice with others. Yeah. And so the expression of that choice, you know, again, and this course ties into the whole topic of love confusion, because the special relationship that we have with, you know, political administrations, as you touched on earlier, Lynn, and this seems to be a contemporary thread, hasn't changed in content since 4 years ago, or 8 years ago, but it's certainly, or 12, or however many far back you want to go. It's the form seems to be different, and on the level of form, we may respond very differently in terms of, you know, what we do in the world. But if we can allow our mind to be guided by the curriculum of forgiveness, it won't be a condemnatory response in the world. It won't be saying, well, this politician or cabinet or whatever is bad. It will be, I'm choosing to, you know, sign my name to this impeachment petition or whatever it happens to be that we're doing, you know, at any given moment, not out of anger, but out of a reflection of a desire to see all that is be included in my mind, and the compassion that comes from identifying with the truth that can't possibly change, because everyone is part of that oneness. And the kindest thing to do on the level of form may at times be to, you know, yank the kid out from running into traffic, and, you know, before it hits the car that it doesn't see, you know. And it may be, let's do something in terms of activism, whether it's a local or a national or a global effort, you know. But it doesn't have to be one of divisiveness. It doesn't have to be a we, they, you, you bad, we good kind of stuff, you know?
yeah. And it comes from this, first off, this notion somehow or the other that I know what's right. I know what's best.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how things should be. You know, kindness looks like this to me. I don't know. No, it's not. I don't have this ego is so completely oblivious to the reality of what is, what love is, and how things are and should be. That's why, you know, lesson, is it 268? Let all things be exactly as they are. You know, when you get to that point where you just say, okay, it is what it is. You know, Byron Katie, when I argue with reality, I lose every time. You know, and she's not talking about reality like the real reality. She's talking about what it is that we see in this world.
Exactly.
And if what I see in this world does not please me, or if what I see in this world does please me, either one of those is a mistake. Because what I see in this world really is an attempt to make something outside of heaven that rivals heaven, that brings me peace, that brings me joy. And it can't be done. It's impossible.
It's impossible.
But if I am thinking, listening to the Holy Spirit and thinking with Jesus about what it is that I see, then nothing about it either pleases or displeases me. I just see it as this is the script. This is the illusion. And if I buy into any part of it to the point where I believe that somehow my action is going to make or break what happens here. And, you know, you talked about signing the petition. I used to sign the petitions all the time. Thinking that somehow or the other, without my one name on here, things will go wrong. Well, there's no me that has any, there's no contingency in which my inserting myself into it is going to make a difference or change anything. If I feel prompted to do it for, you know, whatever reason, you know, I can sign the petition, but look why. Why is it that I'm doing this? Because when I'm doing this, I'm saying I like this and I don't like that. I want this and I don't want that. And what Jesus is telling us is none of it matters. It has no meaning except to the ego. So my deciding that I want to be active or not, you know, it may, you know, put me in a position where I meet people that I need to know and that will help me along my way. Or, you know, there may be things that happen, but those things are not contingent either on my decision or not. You know, I have there's not a decision I can make in this world that is going to make or break what's happening. The only decision that is going to change anything is my decision to see with the Holy Spirit and to forgive what it is that I think I see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that makes any difference. And, you know, to try to rearrange the stick figures in the dream, you know, to put this guy in president instead of that guy or this woman or that, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference.
Yeah, it presupposes that there's some change in the world, which is a projection of my mind that is going to change my mind. No, it's we're reversing cause and effect again, and the course is always and only about the mind. And on the level of form, obviously, it'd be silly to not do the things that we think we need to do, you know, as either activists or citizens or family members, you know, whether it's, you know, getting some medicine for your daughter, taking her to an appointment or, you know, those kind of things. But it's silly to not do the things that seem appropriate, out of a sense of kindness and love. But I think the challenge is that we cross the line beyond that into our personal investment so quickly and so readily that the course reminds us to look at when we've no longer identified with the self of inclusion and starting to identify with what's in it for me thought system and see how that is the source of all warfare, whether it's under one roof or between parts of the planet.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so, you know, that this is why then bringing myself to that peace, or allowing myself to be brought to that peace where I'm no longer making decisions based on the ego's whims of I like or I don't like or this or that. And then it doesn't matter what decision I make, because whatever decision I make, I've given up the responsibility for it. I'm not responsible for anything in this world. I'm only responsible for the things that I see, the way that I see it, and the way that I the way that I relate to it. And so all this, you know, all these special relationships are doing is yanking me around emotionally, and not helping me to remember the truth of who I am. You know, what a great classroom this is, and how helpful
it is. In fact, without that, we would have no way out, because if the the vitriol and the chaos and the disturbance, you know, which the Course calls guilt, and really the whole thought system of sin, guilt, fear, death, destruction, you know, duality, that whole insanity would never be examined, and we would be stuck here, you know, or as the Course says, if this were the world, real world, God would be cruel. And I think that's why, again, it's a course about the mind, and a course about looking at the choice in the mind to identify with things that seem to be outside ourselves, that appear to be projections, but projections make the perception. The projection from the mind has, you know, trying to hurl what seems to be different from perfect oneness outside of our mind has made the mechanism of bodies, which then have the capacity for perception. So projection makes perception is a very literal idea, and a very important concept in the Course, because it's basically saying that we really can't afford to look at everything as a classroom and everything as a reflection of a choice in the mind, and to get back to the mind. And that's why, you know, the curriculum of special relationships is such a richly rewarding and helpful opportunity to see when we're not at peace, you know, that we could choose peace instead of this, whatever this is that seems to be less than what we want.
Exactly. And why don't we? Why don't I? Because I recognize that there is this delicious Nigel has posted in the room, it's a superiority complex.
Yeah.
This delicious feeling of being right. This delicious feeling of being the one, I mean, I know what's right. And, you know, you, Kellyanne Conway, you know, I can see what kind of an evil person you are. Even though when I look at her and I look at her mode of operation, I can see myself doing the same thing. And
we're all puppets here. We're all just little stick figures, like you said, Liam, that are acting out a dream drama in a made up universe and making big deals out of it. And it's when we notice that we've made a big deal, like you were pointing out just moments ago, that is the clue. That's the aha moment. That's the epiphany that leads us back to the mind. And that's why those holy instants become the reminder that we have a holy relationship with everyone and everything, but it's not the specific that's holy. It's the Holy Spirit's use of the specific to get us back to the mind, where we see everyone as the same in truth, not in form, but in content, that we're all completely innocent, that have gotten so enmeshed and entangled in our minds only with a dream drama that has had no effect on reality. And we simply need to just look at the specifics with our inner kindness teacher and use that opportunity to get back to the mind and, you know, slowly pry our white knuckled grip off the ego steering wheel and let Holy Spirit, you know, back to the helm again and steer ourselves out of the darkness. So.
Exactly. I love it. So you want me to go ahead and read the next paragraph?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So this, you know, kind of is exactly what we're saying here. One of the defining characteristics of special love is that it excludes in some way. On the level of content, in other words, it singles out and separates. Not everyone is included in your love. This is the core of specialness. On the other hand, you can spend most of your time with one person, but in content be excluding no one. This is the nature of a holy relationship, which means you are centered in your right mind. Likewise, in form, you may live alone, but your love, compassion, and forgiveness would extend to everyone without exception. And that without exception is, well, you know, in next year, 2018, the Course in Miracles conference that's going to be held in San Francisco. I'm going to be speaking there along with Dove. We're going as a team, and the title of the conference is "Love Makes No Exceptions."
Uh-huh.
And it's this exceptionism that really is it's the culprit. It's the thing that, you know, I can love, that I can't. I can stand, other people I can't. You know, really it is all just conditional. These exceptions are what make it not love.
Somehow it reminds me of a joke I read years ago about the little kid who is misbehaving and his teacher's asking, well, what's the problem? And he says, well, it's not the school I don't like, it's just the principal of the thing. But we make these exceptions, you know. We don't like and I think that's kind of cute because it kind of reminds us it's the ruler of that curriculum, you know, the ego as principal of our mind's classroom, you know, wreaks havoc on our peace because it doesn't know what peace is and it only knows warfare. So, you know, that's why years ago when the Cold War seemed to be over, now it appears to be heating up, you know, and it would seem that, you know, a decade or two or three ago when the Cold War seemed like there was not much oomph left in it, that, the focus of, you know, a lot of political, machinations and maneuvering, shifted from, well, let's, you know, keep the arms race going, you know, on an external, you know, country against country basis. It shifted to, and a lot of people, you know, who were observers of sociology and politics noticed that, okay, at least in this country, it shifted from external enemies and foes to internal ones. I don't know if you really, you know, I kind of thought, well, that's kind of interesting because it suddenly was like, well, now we need to go after the people we don't like within the country instead of without, because the ego never sits still. It always has to have an enemy. It always has to have something against, something, that's an adversary. And it does not know how to think in terms of inclusion other than the temporary expedient of an ally that's okay. Well, you know, you're the enemy of my enemies is my friend kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's a special love relationship with someone that we tend to agree that, you know, has the same battle cry as we do, you know, but that's not peace. And A Course in Miracles consistently and persistently, but gently asks us to look at, what really is going on in our minds and what the cause is that we're identifying with, and seeing that the cause of separation is never going to, you know, result in an effect of peace. It's just
right. There's no easy victory, and what we might believe is a victory, we will defend till the end. You know, once I've beat you, then I'm not going to sit still and let you be because you could come back. You know, you could hurt me. And so there's no easy victory. If I fought a battle and won the victory, you know, what do victors do generally once they've won the war? You know, they go in and they decimate the structure of the government or whatever that made them capable of fighting you.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we don't leave the heads of state in place. You know, we make sure they can't come back. And then we defend, we are consciously, actively defending for the rest of our lives. We can never, ever rest easy. Because the ego won't let that happen.
Right.
So there's no peace in victory.
Yeah, yeah. Because ego tries to burn bridges, but, you know, like the Course says, it may be foolproof. You know, you can blow up all the bridges to your little island, private island, but everything is interconnected. And eventually someone will build another bridge or invent the helicopter and fly over and land on your turf. And
right, you can build the wall. You can build a wall and separate a whole country from another country. And yeah, nobody thinks you could fly into that country, or you could swim, or you could get a boat. You know, there's you'll never, ever,
or tunnel under, you know, exactly.
Or tunnel under, you know.
If El Chapo can do it, you know, why can't... anyway, everyone else. But yeah, it's all just crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's just so silly to think that you know, we can keep any part of perfect oneness apart from any other part. But that's the insane strategy of the ego that believes that somehow, as long as we defend our borders and our walls and our separate interests, that we're somehow going to be safe from the others, you know, the animals that are not like, that are not equal to the animals that we think we are, it's just craziness run amok. But it sometimes seems more crazy than other times. But even the most subtle preference taken out of the realm of a dispassionate observance of the mind and turned into I really, you know, need to identify with this choice, and, you know, whether it's a choice in floor covering or dessert topping or political party. I mean, all those things are artificial in relative to the eternal truth that we are outside of space and time. And that's why we get to look at every single relationship that we have. You know, romantic ones, if they're too big a thing to look at, pick, you know, somebody that you see every week or two at the grocery store and at the cashier's station, you know, or it could be, you know, a friend that you talk to on the phone or a distant relative that you, you know, have some issues with that you can recognize, oh, this is a projection of something I don't like, and I could heal a projection. In some cases, and it's not unlikely in many cases, that if we look at those things, see where we're upset and do our forgiveness work, you know, practice the three R's when those things come up and say, okay, I'm revealing to myself that this person bugs me, and it's not the person, it's my projection of them, and we release our projection, then what oftentimes can happen, and there's, you know, thousands of examples of this, is, you know, suddenly out of the blue, the person will call you, and you have this wonderful conversation, you realize that, you know, what you were upset about really was inconsequential, and, you know, in a sense, you either, you know, make up or, you know, there was, the problem seems to disappear, you know, and I think that's
it never occurred. That's what you realize is that, exactly, oh, what I thought was the problem. Exactly. I thought you hated me because you didn't come to my birthday party. You know, it didn't occur to me that, you know, you fell and broke your leg, and that's the reason you weren't there. You know, we find out that what we thought had happened really wasn't what happened at all. It's all an interpretation in our mind of what appeared to be an occurrence in which we were treated unfairly.
Right.
And this is, I mean, this is all that goes on, is this, this whole idea of the ego saying, you know, that's not right. That's not fair. You're hurting me. I'm your victim. And, you know, just as soon as you get into that, you know, I'm a victim situation, you know, it'll tell you right there where your thinking has gone wrong. And, you know, but here's another thing. And I did notice this yesterday that someone had posted something on Facebook about, some difficulty that they were having, some upset that they were having. And I think it was about the election. And another person who was, of course, a Miracle student popped in and said, why don't you get over your feeling of being a victim? You're not a victim. You know, you're just making this up. You know, all the course speak that, you know, that coursies tend to come up with, to me, oh, this is right. No, I should be telling you that you're not a victim, but in reality is an attack. Uh-huh. It's an attack that's saying, you know, you're not doing it right. You don't understand. I understand and you don't. I know something you don't know. I have some information you don't have, or you have this information and you're misusing it, and therefore you are you're wrong and I'm right. You're wrong and I'm right. That's Course in Miracles students, you know, and Ken had mentioned this, I think, quite a few times, how easily Course in Miracles students go into judgment and start using the Course and the teachings of Jesus to attack their brothers, to attack each other for not, you know, you're not doing it right. And, when I saw that going on and this person was just going on and people were trying to defend, and, you know, I thought, you know, I could weigh in on that. And I thought, you know, why? You know, all I would be doing is making another excuse, another reason, another belief that, you know, you're wrong. You are. And the fact is, it's the whole thing. I'm rubber, you're glue, you know. And the whole thing is just childish. It's infantile.
Uh-huh. And, you mean book ownership doesn't confer instant enlightenment? I mean,
I guess not.
Okay. You actually have to apply it. Okay.
Well, yeah, you actually have to apply it. which means that who do you apply it to? Your own mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to go into my own thinking. And Nigel says, yeah, because it feels good. It feels good to the ego to be right. And that's it. Let's not go correcting each other. Let's go correcting our own minds and our own thinking. And once I corrected my own thinking about it and saw it all as a call for love, then I was able to just go into love and not condemning this person for their, you know, ignorant outburst, as I was seeing it at first. And even though, you know, I did tend to agree, yep, you're making a victim out of yourself.
I'm laughing, Liv, because I somehow, when you said ignorant outburst, I was thinking, well, that's, I think, how the Holy Spirit looks at the entire universe. The tiny mad idea is an ignorant outburst of an insane thought system, you know, that had no effect on reality. The self, the capital S self that we all are and share beyond ego's, you know, pathetic excuse and shabby substitute of existence, you know, that has had no effect on the perfect innocence, the perfect peace, the complete and total inclusive glorious oneness that we haven't even really a clue of in this world, other than just the occasional, the tiniest of little glimpses, that is so far transcends the crazy we they thinking of the ego that we, you know, I think the Course alludes to it in so many places. If you but knew of the, you know, the peace that awaits you, and, you know, you would run into your Father's arms, you know, metaphorically, of course, you would basically, you know, you would, if you knew, you would drop the ego in like a hot potato, you know, or a hot, moldy and toxic potato. you know, but that's really, it's just so silly, isn't it? That we are so invested in you know, a crazy, masochistic, and abusive thought system. But, you know, we'll get over it. give it time. Oh,
yeah. we, in fact, we already are over it, and we're just out here pretending that we're not. We're just out here pretending that, sure enough, bad things are happening. Sure enough, things can go wrong. And you know, I look at all the fear about, like, okay, so we're terrified about what's going to happen to the environment if the EPA is dissolved. As if the EPA actually has been, you know, has the power to do anything to change the hearts of men or to make, you know, people want to, you know, manufacture clean, you know, stuff or not be putting, you know, carbon dioxide up into the atmosphere or, you know, whatever it is that we think is a bad thing. See, and there's that back into my, I think this is good and I think this is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a great thing that the EPA has been here, guarding and making sure that I'm okay. You know, I'm putting my wellness into the hands of another being. You know, it's a good thing we have the Department of Defense in order to, you know, if the Department of Defense wasn't here, oh my goodness, what would I do? You know, we'd be overrun and terrible bad things would happen. And, you know, I'm thinking I can put my protection out into an agency or a person or a government or a police force or whatever and be safe, never thinking that I'm going to be on the other end of that where I'm going to be the victim of the EPA. How many people and how many businesses, how many whatever have thought they were the victim of the EPA? You know, and I'm not going to go into great detail here, but, you know, I have a family. My family has a ranch that has, you know, they settled back in the early 1900s, you know, came over here from another country, immigrants, and came to Colorado, up in this high mountain place and built a ranch. And that ranch is beautiful and wonderful, and they've lived there. You know, they live off the land a lot and, you know, hunt for their food, you know, whether it's hunting season or not, you know, they've just kind of lived, you know, their life like normal natural people. And then, one day they have this beautiful river that runs through the property and they use for, their animals and irrigation, all this kind of stuff. And the EPA came up and said, you can't use this river anymore because this is a wild and scenic river. And a wild and scenic river is property of the country, not of you. And therefore, you know, you're pretty much screwed. This place you've lived here your whole life and for generations have lived there and lived off that land. Well, immediately my family became victims of the EPA. And so many people were happy. Oh, yay. Wild and scenic rivers are protected. Not even thinking, oh, here's a whole family that, and many families who live in that valley who have, lost parts of their livelihood because of this. So, you know, there's not.
Ego's curriculum is always a two-edged sword. There's always a win-lose or a lose-lose, but there's never a win-win, basically, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be careful what you ask for because, you know, us down here, you know, that are, you know, loving this wild and scenic river thing or this, you know, land set off for, you know, national parks or, you know, well, we don't want them to come in and mine or whatever. There's always a winner, always a loser. And, you know, if you have an investment in it, then one way or the other, you're going to be hurt. And if you're not hurt now, you'll be hurt later because it's the investment that causes the problem, nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so pretty crazy, huh?
So, yeah. So without exception, you know, that's pretty big words.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, to reread that last sentence in the paragraph, it says, likewise inform, you may live alone, but your love, compassion, and forgiveness would extend to everyone without exception. And the idea of living alone. Well, in a sense, we all seem to live apart from about seven and a half billion people on the planet. Just in terms of people on this planet alone, not kind of all the other alleged life forms. And that's also assuming that this life form is allegedly alive. But
allegedly. But,
you know, allegedly, exactly. But, you know, I think it's kind of like, somehow that reminds me of, you know, Gandhi's, he was asked what he thought of Western civilization. He thought it would be a good idea, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of like, you know, we assume that there's life on this planet, but, you know, by whose definition, you know? I mean, I think the a course would say, you know, you call this life, you know, the life that the course refers to has nothing to do with bodies or forms or space or time or anything that can come and go. You know, it's like the quality that I think we all long for and yearn for is to go home to that awareness that's beyond the adversarial, beyond the confrontational and divisive and all that stuff. And that's what is offered to us in that thought system that has never left our mind. Because ideas don't leave their source, and that perfect oneness has never left. We didn't damage it. We didn't blow it up. We didn't build a wall in our mind against it. It's right there. We may have interposed, you know, clouds, as the metaphor the Course uses, you know, but you can drop a button through a cloud, you know, there's nothing there, you know, that no matter how thick that cloud is, a button's going to, or a feather's going to fall right through it, you know, and that's the flimsiness of the ego's facade, you know, it's just smoke and mirrors that we're dealing with here, or as Richard Bach says, MGM worlds and Warner Brothers lifetimes, which can't cloak or hide our real eternal reality. But that's where these special relationships come in, and we get to look at the belief that we're alone, the belief that we're like a droplet that's apart from the rest of the ocean, but we're all the ocean. We just are dreaming otherwise. So, should I read the next paragraph?
Sure. I'm going to throw in just one more thought here, is that it all comes, really stems from the idea that somehow or the other, I have the power to change what God made. Somehow I have the power to take perfect oneness and turn it into something else. And it's the belief in my own power to overturn something that is impossible to overturn. Mm-hmm. And the guilt that comes about because I think I have done it. I mean, this is the bottom line of all this. So, you know, it doesn't matter what we're talking about. We're talking about love, special relationships, or politics, or religion, or, you know, hunger, starvation, you know, war, anything that seems fearful to us, you know, just to even think that it's possible that I can undo what God made is the total arrogance of the ego and the total belief that I am not what God made, that you know, somehow I've undone heaven. Not possible. So go on to the next paragraph.
Okay. Since love is content and not form of any kind, and that's from chapter 16, section 5, paragraph 12, you may not necessarily be rejecting love if someone, quote, loves you, desires a special relationship with you, and pledges their devotion and undying love, unquote, and you do not respond on that level. You need only look within your mind for ego complicity in your decision, some signs being fear, judgment, repulsion, selfishness, anger, and vengeance. You can still enfold this person in your love and compassion content without being romantically involved with him or her form. You just want to notice whether there is a quote, charge, unquote, to your preference to live alone. If so, then it would be a good idea to ask for help to look at the hidden content. And I think that's, again, any time that we're the least bit upset or discouraged or depressed or angry or you know, whatever it is, if it's not completely perfectly peaceful, that's a clue. That's our curriculum that we've jumped into identifying with a special relationship with the specifics in our lives, and we have this silver platter classroom handed to us to get us back to the contents of our unconscious mind for healing. And it's brought forth perfectly, almost like a mathematically, you know, exact set of equations that delivers through the script of our dream lives just what we need to forgive, just what we need to look at and reveal our ego investment in and say no to.
it perfectly reflects my thinking. It perfectly reflects own thinking. And if I ever wonder, you know, what am I thinking? All I have to do is look around me and see, it's all being perfectly reflected, projected out into a world. So.
Right. Yeah. And there's those two thought systems, you know, like the workbook lesson from a few days ago, you know, God is in everything I see because God is in my mind, you know, and that's, I think that was one from a few days. Anyway, something like that.
Yeah.
Because that's the real, alternative that the Course presents is, you know, when we practice, we get to a point where, and I think that's sort of like a little teaser, is like, you know, coming attractions basically in those early workbook lessons, that there's a few of those sprinkled in that remind us that, including the one for today, is, you know, my mind is very holy, because everyone's mind is, and that's the reality. But we need to, you know, look at the chaff. We need to look at the clouds and the smoke and mirrors that we put in the way. And we do that by examining exactly what comes up on any given day in front of our face, as Gary Renard's teachers say. Keep looking with gentle compassion at all of our condemnatory thoughts and all the things where we would, you know, where we've picked up the sword and where we've pulled back the bow and got the arrow ready to fly, and sometimes we let them fly and you know, on a level of form, but just pull, you know, noticing the stress on our arms when that bow is pulled back and the, you know, the quivering pun intended of our flesh when, you know, metaphorically, you know, we see our the hungry dogs of fear going after the stuff that we have the special hate for, after special love, you know, doesn't cut it. And we say, okay, well, there must be a problem here in my projection, not in my mind, but in what seems to be coming back to me. And it's like, well, wait a minute. There's our opportunity to notice that we've armed ourselves against an imaginary foe again. Yeah.
Exactly. And thank God, you know, that we have this, you know, that there is a light in the dream, that there is, mm-hmm. there actually is a light that's here that's leading us back. So, and I'm grateful. Like I said, I'm grateful for as much and as hard as it is to look and say, it's exactly what I needed. Because, you know, it looks like what I needed is going to undo the everything that I know in the world. Well, that's the point. You know, it's, you know, I needed, to have this upset so that I could see how easily I'm upset and what I'm upset about. Uh-huh. Because those are directly pointing to, you know, my desire to be in control, my desire, my belief that I know what's good, my belief that I know what's bad, this all goes into these beliefs and, you know, showing me how foolish it is to think that, what is it that Jesus says? It's a joke to think, that time can come to circumvent eternity.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a laughable thing to think that, you know, what I see in this world can undo what God made. Not possible.
Yeah.
So,
and there's so much solace in that if we really let that sink in, what you just said, you know, that really we haven't damaged, the oneness and the peace that we think we're looking for, but it's within us. It's just, we just covered it over. We just put a little thin facade of space time stuff over it.
And yeah, we can't see it no more, but
yeah.
It's really there.
Yeah.
It's really there. So I'm going to read this last paragraph, and I think that this really wraps it up beautifully. You answer a person's call for love in content by seeing him or her as one with you, sharing the same interest as God's Son, as both an ego and the self of Christ. See, this is it. It's by looking at you and seeing myself in you, seeing my, you know, that you and I are in the same boat. You know, Kellyanne and I are the same person, mm-hmm. you know.
That was hard. Everyone else.
Yeah, it was hard for me to take, to look at her and say, you know, she's not only is she the same as me, I've done the same things that she's doing. And, you know, I listened to her speak and I recognize, you know, when I worked for the Department of Energy and I don't know if you or anyone you know have had the same experience, but part of what I did was I was working for the, at the Rocky Flats plant up here in Colorado. Uh-huh. And my job, I was an environmental engineer. I worked in the environmental department, and it was my job, among many things that I did there, but towards the end, this is what I did, was did the air emissions. So I ran a crew that went around and checked all the logs all over the county and down into Denver and all around the wind disbursement areas from the plant. And so we had these places where they would go and get samples, and then we'd analyze the samples, and we analyzed the samples out of the stacks, and we calculated. I had to calculate the actual emissions that came from the plant, as far as radioactive material, which, you'll laugh when I tell you this. When I first started doing it, we were doing it on, I'm thinking it was Excel. It was spreadsheets, all right?
Sure.
And every month I would have.
Physicalc, maybe?
Yeah. I would have these spreadsheets that actually, if you printed them out, which I would do, and you could paper the wall in the office with all these, you know, hundreds of calculations that finally would come down to one number that was our emissions for the month.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I had this huge, I mean, it was, oh my God, you can't believe how ridiculous it was. So I had to have all these laboratory results, and I had to have all these, air volume, all this kind of stuff, and to come up with one number. And then every month I would have to go to a meeting that the community was invited to and explain our emissions. And of course there were protesters there with signs, and it was like a, you know, Trump rally, right? So, and I'd be the one who was up there, you know, defending the Department of Energy that, you know, we were not polluting the world with radioactive material. And they actually had, I actually had to take a class. They brought a, this guy from Texas who came up to teach us how to respond to the public, how to take the public's questions and redirect it, and to basically kind of shift the thought into another thought, so that we never actually directly answered these questions. All we did was shift it over to, you know, now it's your fault. No, and I look at Kellyanne Conway, and I think she must have had that same coach, because she says exactly the kinds of things that we were taught to say. Not
I think if the Starship Enterprise needed deflector shields, they could hire her as a consultant.
She would be perfect. Yeah. She's doing her job perfectly. And once I saw that, and I thought, oh my Jesus, I was doing the same thing, and
yes.
You know, the same misdirection, the same I was doing exactly that very same thing. And how can I sit here and criticize her for that? Because she's doing what she thinks is the right thing. How many times have I done what I thought was the right thing? When I look back at it now, I'm appalled, because, you know, what a shill I was. But, you know, still in all. And by the way, we finally got I'm trying to think of what it was. Anyway, we finally got a program that just did everything. You just put the calculations in there and boom, it would spit out the number and, change my job forever from that. It was just perfect. But, cause I mean, I would spend days and nights. I would be there were times I was there 24 hours or more doing those calculations, making sure that they were right before the public meetings. But, and this thing was just perfect. It just did it for me. But anyway, so it's the sharing the same interest, seeing him or her as one with you. Sharing the same interests as God's Son, as both an ego and the self of Christ. The form of the relationships would then flow from this decision to undo whatever you have used to keep yourself separate from others and from God. That is why Jesus speaks of forgiveness as, quote, an earthly form of love, which as it is in heaven has no form, from Workbook Lesson 186. This is it. You know, if I can look at Kellyanne and say, man, is she doing what I've done? Is she thinking what I've thought? Is she, you know, have I been in the same shoes? And, you know, do I hate myself for it? Do I revile myself for it? Do I think that, you know, I was an evil person because I did that? No, I was doing what I thought was right. She is doing what she thinks is right. It's not up to me to say whether it's right or wrong, because I don't know. And if there's anything this course does for me, it brings me back to this I don't know place where I can recognize there's no form, there's nothing here that is right or wrong. It's thinking makes it so.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I was thinking if we can embrace every person with the same care and consideration, regardless of whether or not we oppose their behavior, that is a huge clue that we are beginning to look at special relationships, the special love and the special hate, and see that it's always a choice in the mind as to whether or not we want to work from inclusion or exclusion. And I think you just stated that beautifully as this FAQ, addresses so beautifully too. So thank you, Lynn, as always, for sharing this hour. It's become an hour and a half, I guess, in the last few months.
90 minutes. It works.
Yeah.
In fact, it's perfect for me because we get a lot of good stuff out in this time, I think. And
a lot of material here to cover, huh?
Absolutely. And so Bruce will be posting this talk on his website, which is acimblog.com, right? Mm-hmm. The .com? And
yes.
acimblog.com. And you'll be able to go and re-listen if you so choose. If you missed any part of it, and I appreciate you for doing that, Bruce. And
likewise for all you do.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to stop through the recording and let go of the mic and turn it over to you, Devin. And I'm going to actually hang up the radio computer. And if you want to talk for a minute afterwards, we can do so.
That's great. Thanks.